to the 392nd edition of Travel Witch Radio, brought to you tonight by the best holiday gift of the year, my book, The New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from Our National Pastime. 480 pages for just a sawbuck, such a deal. Make sure you get the 2020 version with Mike Trout, Derek Jeter, and Tom Seaver on the cover.
And here at Travel Itch Radio, we also cover all the bases, including military ones. We talk to hoteliers, destinations, authors, writers, entrepreneurs, and tour operators, anyone connected to the world of travel, and try not to cover not only the USA, but interesting, unusual places, people, and events around the world.
And sometimes we go beyond the world we know. That is the case tonight when our guest is Valerie Stimek, author of Dark Skies, A Practical Guide to Astrotourism, published by Lonely Planet in September 2019. Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, Val.
Thank you so much for having me.
As a kid, I lived on top of a hill in Passaic, New Jersey, and loved looking at the New York City skyline from my bedroom window, but I was also far enough away from the city lights to have a good view of the sky and wondered what was up there. Is that also how you got started?
It is. I actually started stargazing as a kid, so I grew up in a slightly different place than New Jersey. I grew up in Alaska, and the night sky is very dark during the winter and very long, so I had a lot more opportunity to see what was in the sky.
Valerie, what is astrotourism, and is it something that's relatively new?
Astrotourism is a field of tourism that has probably been around for a long time, but hasn't had a proper name until about 2015. And it's just the idea that people are traveling for astronomy experiences. So that might be going stargazing, going to see the aurora, traveling to a planetarium or to an observatory, anything like that.
Okay. And Popular Mechanics came out today with a big story about astrophotography. So we'd like to know, are you into that? And also, do you own a telescope and do you use that?
Yes, I do a little bit of astrophotography. I definitely do not consider myself to be a professional by any stretch. I'm always learning, which is just the reality of being interested in the field of astronomy. We're always learning new things. And I do own a telescope, but I don't use it very often because I currently live in a city and the light pollution is just a little bit too strong for the telescope that I have.
Okay, the telescope I owned was only to look at the girls' dorm when I was in college, but anyway, as you mentioned, you grew up in Alaska where you see northern lights and gorgeous night skies all the time. I know there are other places in this country and abroad far from the bright lights where stargazing is a great hobby, either with the naked eye or through amateur or professional telescopes. Arizona comes to mind, but could you share some of your favorite locations?
Absolutely. So Arizona is a great destination, as is New Mexico and Utah, basically the whole American Southwest, because there's not a lot of development. There's a lot of natural beauty, wide open spaces, beautiful open sky views. I'm partial, of course, to Alaska with the long nights. So you can get some great night sky experiences, dark winter nights across the Northern Hemisphere during the winter. Other places outside of the U.S., one of my favorite is Jordan. The country of Jordan has some fantastic areas where you can have a combination of astronomy and cultural experiences. And I'm also a fan of more unusual places. So in the book, we cover different destinations like areas in Brazil, in Chile. We have a few in Southeast Asia. So the world really does have opportunities all over for dark skies. You just have to be willing to travel away from the city and the city lights.
We're talking with Valerie Stimek, author of Dark Skies, A Practical Guide to Astrotourism.
Valerie, I noticed on your website, had your first live look at the southern sky. How different is it than what we're used to in the northern hemisphere?
I did. So my first trip to see the southern night sky was in, it seems very long ago now, but it was in March of 2019. And yeah, it's incredible. The southern night sky has some differences that we are not necessarily aware of. The first and most important is the Milky Way looks very different. So in the northern hemisphere, we see a pretty consistent band of the shape of our galaxy. In the southern hemisphere, the perspective is slightly changed because there's actually a dark cloud of dust and gas between our view in the southern hemisphere and the Milky Way. So there's a little bit more shape and contour. In fact, there are some mythologies and astronomy from the southern hemisphere that instead of using constellations to make shapes in the sky, use the shadows and dark areas in the Milky Way to have shapes and stories about those shapes. The other thing that the southern night sky has is the Magellanic Clouds, which are actually two other semi-galaxies. They're sort of disorganized galaxies. They're not like the Milky Way, which is a spiral galaxy, very, very sort of organized as galaxies go. The Magellanic Clouds are these little clouds that are technically the same material. They're galaxies and they're made of stars and all of the same material, but they aren't organized in a nice disk. And they sit just outside the Milky Way. So we can see them from here, but they're not actually part of the Milky Way.
Wow.
And Val, speaking of things that are southern, I love exploring all the rockets and museums in Huntsville, Alabama, the Rocket City. And I see you've been there too. Did you sign up for the astronaut camp? I saw a picture of you in an astronaut's uniform.
So I have been to space camp. As a writer, I actually attended as a writer. So it was a little bit different than what you'd experience if you went and did the full multi-day course. But I did get to do the gyro chair that sort of flips you around. That was definitely not my favorite. got to go inside some of the habitats and learn all about what astronauts do as training. But I didn't get to do the overnight. So I think at some point I'll have to go back and do the full adult space camp and do the overnights and the bunks and all that.
Have you witnessed any rocket launches at Cape Kennedy? Would you like to be one of Elon Musk's first astronauts?
So I have seen a rocket launch. I've been fortunate to see one rocket launch from Kennedy, and I live on the western coast of the U.S., so it's a bit of a journey for me to get over to Florida. But I did see a launch in late 2014. But when it comes to stepping onto one of those rockets myself, I'm a little bit more cautious. I'd like to say pioneers are important parts of any exploration, but not all pioneers survive. And we don't like to think about that, but it's a reality with spaceflight that it's a high-risk experience. And Elon and many of the other people working in human spaceflight right now are doing their very best to make it as safe as possible, but there's always a risk. So I will let other people go first. I will go second. I'm happy to go second on this one.
So can you tell us some more about some of the other North American destinations that you visited to satisfy your curiosity about celestial travel and tourism?
Sure. So it's interesting. I've begun to just incorporate night sky experiences into almost every trip that I take, unless I'm going to just visit a city. So for example, I went to Moab, Utah in February of this past year, and that's a great place if you want to base yourself for days of adventures and outdoor experiences and then really nice night sky quality. Other places that I've been to Hawaii. Hawaii is a fantastic spot to go stargazing. There are a number of different opportunities on the different islands, and Hawaii is far enough south that you can actually see some of the southern constellations without having to go all the way south of the equator.
That's great. We're talking to Valerie Stimack, author of Dark Skies, A Practical Guide to Astrotourism.
Val, is it unusual for a woman to be involved in astrotourism? It seems to me that space travel and astronomy have always attracted more attention from men.
I would agree with that. Absolutely. Historically, it's been a pretty male-dominated field, as many of the sciences were for the past few centuries. The difference that I would say is we're starting to see a lot more women getting involved in space travel and astronomy, and that's wonderful. It seems to add a great diversity. We get really creative, interesting stories from people who have gotten involved in the field and come from different backgrounds. When it comes to astrotourism, that's actually such a new field that there aren't a lot of rules. There's not a lot of history on who's involved and who's not. So I would say there are very few people in general in the field of astrotourism writing about astrotourism or leading tours. And it's quite diverse already. So we're lucky as a sort of new field or subfield of tourism, there aren't a lot of pre-existing gender norms that might slow people down from having real success here.
Are there organized tours for celestial tourism? And if so, have you hosted any of them?
So yes, there absolutely are. The most common tours for celestial tourism, aurora tours, which are a lot more accessible to many people. A lot of people who go north or south to try and see the aurora end up doing a tour, or eclipse tours, which have become increasingly popular. I actually have not hosted a tour myself, so I was set to host my first tour in March of this year. So I had to make the difficult decision at the beginning of March to cancel my tour, and it was the right decision because we probably would have gotten stranded overseas. It was a tour in Jordan. And yeah, unfortunately, I haven't hosted one yet, but it's still on my list. As soon as it's safe to travel, I'm going to reschedule that and get a group of people over to Jordan for the night sky.
Well, Valerie, tell us about your book. What motivated you to write it? How long did it take? How big is it? Is it based totally upon your personal experiences?
So Dark Skies was actually an idea that came to me from a website that I started called Space Tourism Guide. So back in late 2016, I decided to start my own website all about the same topic, but I didn't really see any competition. There was no one else writing about it, so I decided to start my own site, and then I had the opportunity to pitch the idea to Lonely Planet, and they decided, they thought, as we've learned, that people would be interested in this topic. So I was motivated actually before writing the book. I was already writing on similar topics. It only took about 10 weeks to write, and it is not totally based upon my personal experiences. And that was a decision that we made in part because we wanted this book to represent the opportunities around the globe. And it's just a little bit prohibitive to be able to travel to every single place that we've mentioned in the book. I mean, if I have my whole lifetime, but we wanted to get the book out sooner rather than later. So it ends up being around 300 pages. A fair number of it is actually inspired by my experiences and certainly by my knowledge of the night sky. There's an Easter egg on one of the pages that tells you where I grew up. It's one of the pages about Alaska. We talk about, you know, I picked this location because I grew up in this area. So still got to have my hands in every piece of it, even though I haven't actually been to every place in the book.
That's cool. Where did you get the pictures? And could you tell us about your long association with Lonely Planet? This is not something new.
It is not. I've been very fortunate to work with Lonely Planet since late 2014, actually right around the same time I saw my first rocket launch. But I haven't always worked on astrotourism for them. So I've been fortunate to write about different destinations I visited, destinations I've lived in, and astrotourism. It's been a long-standing partnership of creating content for them. The pictures actually come from professional astrophotographers, and that's why I wanted to clarify up front that I am definitely not a professional. That's a unique valued skill set, and we wanted to make sure that the photos in the book were truly representative of what people would potentially see when they went somewhere. So I was very particular with my editor that we chose photos that didn't seem like they were overly manipulated or over edited. We wanted the book to feel very inspiring but still very close to the reality that you experience with your own eyes when you go to these places and try to see these things.
Okay, I want to tell our listeners you're listening to Travel It Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent Lee, and our guest Valerie Stimmick, author of Dark Skies, a practical guide to astrotourism. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com, or check out the archive show on our Facebook page. And we're talking with Valerie Stimmick, author of Dark Skies, a practical guide to astrotourism. Val, like me, I'm sure you go to any planetarium you can find on your travels. What are some of your favorites and why?
This is actually such a tricky question to come up with an answer for, because planetariums, you might think all planetariums are the same, right? Because you just go into a planetarium and you sit back in the comfy chair, you look up and you see pictures of the night sky or stars moving around. But every planetarium has its own experience and its own shows. And so it's hard to choose between them because often you can't see the same show in different planetariums. But if I have to choose, I would put at least on my list, I would say the Hayden Planetarium in New York City. That's, I think, one of the best planetariums in the country. It's certainly one of the most well-funded. So they often have the best shows, and there's real experience to explore our galaxy and our universe from their planetarium. The planetarium that I used to live near here in the Bay Area, which is called Chabot at Chabot Space and Science Center, they are one of my favorites, probably my local favorite. You know, we all have our local favorites. And then I've been struggling to choose a third one because I've been in so many that it's hard to pick. But I think one of my favorites was, I believe it's the Clark Planetarium in Salt Lake City. The planetarium is wonderful. They have great shows, but they also have a cool, really, really cool science museum kind of attached with some very interesting interactive elements that I had never seen at another space or science museum like that before.
And Valerie, do you restrict yourself to celestial tourism, or are you a travel writer who likes to incorporate celestial tourism wherever and whenever you can?
I am definitely the latter. I'm a travel writer who, with a space addiction, is probably the nicest way to say it. I love combining the two, and I think that's been something I've been very fortunate to have done. Instead of restricting myself to any particular field of travel, I added celestial tourism and astrotourism into what I was already writing about, and space tourism, which is a whole other field, space tourism being when people actually go to space, and hopefully will be happening soon. But the nice thing is, during the last 6 to 8 months when we haven't been able to travel, it's very much acceptable to go out by yourself into a place with no one else around and no lights and stand and look at the stars. So astrotourism has actually seen a little bit of a boost from the lockdowns and people not traveling, because they can just go sort of locally to a place with nobody else and still enjoy the night sky.
Val, I'm a huge fan of Star Trek and also The Orville, this Sean McFarlane spoof. Since you like out-of-this-world things, I'd like to know your opinion of these shows.
I, broadly speaking, I love sci-fi in all shapes and forms. I will not choose between Star Trek and Star Wars. I like them both. They're very different. They're very different stories with their own value. But I will share that in the last, throughout the pandemic lockdown, my husband and I have been slowly working our way through all of the Star Trek shows, starting with the original Star Trek. We've done Next Generation. We did Deep Space Nine. We're kind of dabbling in some of the other shows at this point, but it's been a real treat to sort of watch that show in a close sitting with, you know, the other shows, so we can actually understand how it all fits together in the fantastic universe that Gene Roddenberry built.
Valerie, is there a difference between astrotourism and celestial tourism, or can you use those terms interchangeably?
I think it's fair to use them interchangeably. I haven't really seen anyone define them differently. I think astrotourism might be the newer way to name this type of travel, but I think celestial tourism is probably an acceptable synonym. You could use them, and they mean the same thing to me. I wouldn't be confused if someone used one or the other.
We're talking to Valerie Stimack, author of Dark Skies, A Practical Guide to Astrotourism.
And Val, I'd like to ask you, in your opinion, what are some of the highlights from your book? If you're being interviewed on a radio station, as you are now, actually, what would you say are the highlights, things that you really would like to think stand out in your book?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. So there's two things that I would like to highlight for people that they might not be quite aware of when they first pick up the book. The first is that it does try and cover the whole globe. So I'm really proud of the work that my editor and I did in selecting locations outside of the U.S. and even more outside of the southwestern U.S. So the United States we're very fortunate that we have a huge country with such diversity in many areas, including in natural beauty and the rural experiences we can have. And so we could have filled the whole book with just great stargazing places in the southwestern U.S. We would have even had to go to other parts of our country, but we tried really hard to sample places across the country. So we have locations in Pennsylvania, I think we have Maine. You know, we've tried to make sure that there are locations close to people wherever people are. But we also wanted to have countries represented from across the globe. So as I said, we have Brazil, we have Israel, I believe we have Namibia. And that was a really conscious decision to make this book not necessarily a guidebook, think of a Lonely Planet book, but certainly a resource that would inspire global travel. That's the first thing. The other thing I would like people to know or thumb through if they find the book and they want to see if they like it is I really love the section about rocket launches. This is not a section that anyone ever asked me about, but we built a section in the book that talks about every country in the globe where you can go see a rocket launch. And some of those countries are much easier to visit, like the U.S. or even New Zealand. And some of them are much more difficult to visit, like French Guiana or Russia. Well, technically Russia launches from Kazakhstan too, which you can go visit. But my point is that section highlights destinations people would never even think of as having anything to do with astrotourism, but which are one of a select group of very exclusive opportunities for what I consider to be the most jaw-dropping experience of human innovation possible, which is watching a rocket go to space. So if you're on the fence and you're like, I don't know about stargazing or Aurora, but you love engineering or mechanics, the rocket section is a really fun section that you might be inspired by.
And you mentioned several times you grew up in Alaska. Obviously, they have very long, dark days in the winter. But I want to ask you also about the Northern Lights and other meteorological phenomena. Are you interested in all kinds of things like weather as well?
I am not personally as interested in weather beyond a, I would say, a very novice appreciation for the magnificent ecosystem that we live in and how clouds are really cool and interesting. But it's funny, my grandfather wanted to be an astronaut. He was not ever an astronaut. He was a traditionally Italian man, as you might picture in your head. So he didn't really fit the physical specifications that we had for our early astronauts, but he went from his interest in astronomy and he became a weatherman and was interested in meteorology. So there's actually a little bit of family heritage in this sort of looking up and being interested in what's above us.
Okay. What about the Northern Lights? I mean, you must have seen a lot of those. What was that like? I've never seen it.
Yeah, I did see them a lot, and as all children will do, I totally took them for granted, which I had no awareness of that until I moved away from Alaska, and people would say, oh, seeing the Northern Lights is on my bucket list. And as a kid, I wrote a bucket list, but it didn't have the Northern Lights on it because I was so used to seeing them. So yeah, I've seen them many times. I was very fortunate right before lockdown. The last trip I took before the pandemic sort of stopped the world of travel was to Alaska. I spent a week in Fairbanks, which is one of the best places in Alaska to see the Northern Lights. And I got a chance to go out every night, stay up way too late, be exhausted for 5 days in a row, but see the aurora every single night. And it's really breathtaking. It moves like nothing else on Earth. There's no other phenomena that looks like the aurora. And that's such a special thing that we can experience here and doesn't happen on every planet. It only happens on certain planets. So as you can tell, I have an appreciation for the unique things that our planet has to offer.
Are you planning any other books on celestial tourism?
That is a great question. I don't have any other formal plans with Lonely Planet other than keeping the book updated. So Dark Skies is sort of designed to get a little bit out of date over time, especially as we move toward having actual space tourism where people are going to space. That section will get out of date the most quickly. But I do publish, I self-publish a book every year, which is The Night Sky in 2020 or The Night Sky in 2021. It highlights night sky events throughout the whole year that you might want to plan to try and see. So this could be opportunities to see planets in very close alignment in the sky. So for example, in December, we're going to see Jupiter and Saturn move very, very close to one another in the sky. It might be meteor showers, which we have a section on in Dark Skies, but I also highlight all of the major and some of the minor meteor showers in my night sky book for each year. And then any eclipses or other interesting phenomena, things that deep space objects like other galaxies that you might want to try and go out and see. They're all in this little ebook that I put out every year on my website.
Is there anything we haven't asked that you'd like to add?
That is a great question. The only other thing I would love to point out is I actually worked on another book for Lonely Planet it doesn't have my name on the cover, so it doesn't always come up, but it's called The Universe, and it's about 800 pages, so it's a much heftier book, but it's considered a guidebook to the universe. So if you are someone who's listening and you're really interested in astronomy, you want to learn more, I recommend checking out The Universe. It's definitely going to take space on your bookshelf, but it's a fascinating journey from right here on Earth as far as we can go. And I was fortunate to contribute the sections on deep space objects. So I got to look at quasars and black holes and the things that we barely understand anything about and learn about those in a way that I had never studied them before. So if you are looking for an additional book or you want to learn a little bit more about some of these things in the night sky that I'm talking about, The Universe is a fabulous resource, and it's also been contributed to by a number of other very talented writers that helped make this compendium of the entire universe possible.
Well, tell our Travel Itch Radio listeners how they can buy your book and learn more about astrotourism.
Yeah, so if you would like to get a copy of Dark Skies or The Universe, you can buy those through Lonely Planet. You can buy them typically through independent booksellers, which I always like to mention since a lot of booksellers have struggled in the past few months. You can find them on Amazon. And then I also sell them through my own website, and I sell signed copies through my website. So if you would like a signed copy, or if you would like to gift a signed or personalized copy, my website is the best place to find that, and that would be Space Tourism Guide at spacetourismguide.com.
Terrific.
That's great. Our guest tonight has been Valerie Stimmick, author of Dark Skies, A Practical Guide to Astrotourism. And as a kid, I loved this stuff, and I still do now that I'm not a kid anymore. I'm a kid at heart. So thank you, Valerie, for joining us tonight on Travel It Radio. The World Series is over, but the off-season is on. So off-season's greetings to everyone. This is your chance to get the best armchair companion for the long, cold winter months. It's my book, The New Baseball Bible, Notes, Nuggets, Lists, and Legends from Our National Pastime. 480 pages for less than a sawbuck. It's both a coffee table book and a bathroom book. Read it backwards and still enjoy it. That's The New Baseball Bible 2020 edition with Mike Trout on the cover. Get it on Amazon.com today. Mary Ellen, anything you'd like to add?
Oh, I'll tell you, honestly, I've loved having Valerie as our guest. I have been so fascinated with rocket launches and what Elon Musk is doing. And, you know, although I live in the city, I can't go outside and look up at the sky and enjoy it as much as if I was in Utah. But I am just completely fascinated by this topic. And it's great to know all the different places you can go and really enjoy the sky in ways that I never even thought possible.
Well, when I was in Arizona, I got to see, at least from the outside, some of the observatories, and they're all on top of mountains and far from the city lights, and I can see how they can really get a good look at what's up there.
Oh, I'm so envious. It just sounds so beautiful. Our world is so beautiful.
It is, and there are many other worlds out there waiting for us to explore, as we've seen with shows like Star Trek, which is a show that makes you think. To me, it's just a show that really makes you think. And Captain Jean-Luc Picard, played by Patrick Stewart, is a cerebral commander. He thinks first before he goes into war, and he tries to reason things out and meets strange species and tries to work things out, and that's the whole gist of Star Trek, and that's why Gene Roddenberry did such a wonderful job with the subject. As Val mentioned.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, we're a little bit out of time, but next week, we're going to be talking with Roy Alexander of Astro Ventures. So we're going to hear more about celestial tourism, and that will be our last show of 2020, the week before Thanksgiving. So next week, Roy Alexander, Astro Ventures, will be our guest. And that's it for this edition of Travel Itch Radio. Next week, same time, same station, same writer, same announcers, and same out-of-this-world theme. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with co-host Mariella Nugent-Lee, and our guest, Valerie Stimmick, author of Dark Skies, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night, and stay safe.